Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you're anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Today, we're talking easily misunderstood terminology, and this episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Check out skywayacq.com for more. Let's get this started. Sometimes we drop terms while we're talking in the podcast that seem simple to us, but are actually quite confusing. And contract vehicle is one of those terms.
What contract vehicle are we using? Right. I used to hear that one and wonder, why is the term vehicle used? Why not just say, what contract are we using?
Before we get into that a little deeper, let's stop and say thanks.
Thanks this week goes to Justin Maitland. Justin is a senior manager in the field sales readiness for Nutanix. He's in Nashville, Tennessee. I want to thank Justin for engaging with our podcast episodes and really for inspiring us to dig into some of these areas that we just take for granted that they make sense to people. He inspired this episode on contract vehicles in the context of awarding contracts through this path of least resistance. That's the contract vehicle. So thanks, Justin, for helping us make government contracting better one contract at a time and one podcast episode at a time.
Thanks, Justin. All right, back to the topic, contract vehicles, even though the thank you was very much about contract vehicles as well. Contract vehicle normally refers to an existing contract or contract mechanism that the government acquisition team can use or does use. And I know that I still haven't explained anything.
Even more terms. The term vehicle, it often comes up when the government decides to buy a product or a service using an existing vehicle, instead of building their own contract vehicle.
Yeah, so let's try to actually explain why that vehicle is tacked on to the term contract. I don't think we've quite gotten there yet. And you know, Kevin, you know how much I hate dictionary definitions in these kind of things. I'm going to read a little bit. One of the definitions of vehicle is a medium through which something is expressed or achieved or displayed. So if you think of it that way, a contract is a thing. A vehicle is a medium through which a contract can be achieved. So it's analogy time here. If I want to travel from coast to coast in the United States, if I want to get from New York to LA, there's a lot of choices of vehicles, of transportation vehicles available. I can get in a car, I can take a train, I can go by airplane, boat, I can ride a bike, or I can even walk if I want to. Your choice of transportation method depends on how quickly you need to get there, on what you need to transport with you, or it could be just personal preference. If you're afraid of flying, maybe you take the train, even if it takes longer.
You're going to take the path of least resistance. I was talking to a podcast listener recently, and they talked about the fact that they take the Acela from DC to New York, because it's become the path of least resistance. Because by the time you go to the airport, go through a security, all that kind of stuff, and it's an hour and a half flight-ish, but it's like 3 hours on the train. But it's the path of least resistance now, because the security is just very different, right? So the idea of what vehicle do you want to use is driven by, to your point, Paul, what's the path of least resistance for what you're trying to get done?
All right, off of transportation vehicles, back to contract vehicles. Existing contract vehicles tend to be large agency-wide contracts.
Not always, but they tend to be. But sometimes they're highly targeted and they're niche contracts that are more focused on a specific type of product or service.
All right, some examples. You might have heard of a MAC, a multi-agency contract, or multiple award contract, which is what I always thought MAC stood for.
Yeah, multi-agency is actually in the FAR. Multi-agency contract is what MAC stands for in this context. So you need context. Multi-agency contract, it can kind of be a misnomer because it means other agencies can use it, but they may or may not use it. Again, is it the path of least resistance for them?
There are also multiple award contract vehicles, and that's another way to use MAC, M-A-C. Multiple award contract vehicles are things like GSA's OASIS contract, the One Acquisition Solution for Integrated Services contract, or a GWAC, a government-wide acquisition contract for IT products and services, for example.
Then you have smaller ones that, well, relative, smaller is a relative term, like the HCATS, which stands for Human Capital and Training Solutions. That's focused on human capital, on professional services, on niche services, basically. And then there are ones that are really niche. Like I managed a contract for the military that was a single award contract for one company that made radios that multiple defense agencies needed. So multiple agencies would order off of this one contract.
The way these things work, the reason it's a vehicle is it's actually a contract. A company has a contract to deliver a type of thing, but it's not specific this many at this time. You have to place orders against them. So in the case of a multi-agency contract or a multiple award contract, more than one company will have a contract vehicle. They have an actual contract, but it's not, it's for the right to deliver things in the future, the ability to deliver things in the future. Then customers, government customers, go to that contract vehicle and they buy services or products from that. And that's the actual order. That's the actual, what we think of as a contract. I will pay you this to deliver this to me in this amount of time, right? But the vehicle is sitting there waiting to be used. It's already been awarded and made available for buyers.
Back to our train metaphor, is the train's going from DC to LA. It's going back and forth, back and forth. You may only need to go from DC to, I don't know, what's in the middle, Nashville or something, pick a city, right? But the vehicle's going there. Should you be on the vehicle? If it's the path of least resistance to get you from A to B, if you need these radios and it's a path of least resistance, you're going to use this contract versus, like you said before, Paul, creating your own contract for radios when one already exists that you can just use.
Yeah,
you have to build your own train. You're going to get on the train that's already going there.
You just have to buy a ticket. The train's going either way. We can pause before we go any farther and talk about acquisition time zones and execution time zones. This is a zoneless concept. The idea of a contract vehicle starts back with the requirement zone. Hey, we have a requirement. Can this requirement be purchased through an existing contract vehicle?
In the market research zone, you're really going to be looking at that, because that's when you start to dig into, do we need to do our own source selection? Do we need to create our own process? Can we just order this
right on
somebody else's contract? That's huge.
Right. And it flows right through award and execution. You'll execute the contract and manage the contract through an existing contract vehicle, your own order or contract in air quotes against an existing vehicle.
And this can get squirrely, because remember, you're riding their train. Their train moves at the speed of their train. Their train stops where it wants to. So there are ones that are customized and there are ones that they have a set schedule, et cetera. So it can be challenging to if you're cramming your solution onto the wrong vehicle, it gets really frustrating. But the idea is that they cover all these zones. And if you're not familiar with the zones, the acquisition time zones, we cover those in episode number 3. And the execution time zones, we cover those in episode number 84.
Let's also link this to the FAR. FAR 8.004 is use of other sources. The FAR tells you, if an agency is unable to satisfy requirements for supplies and services from the mandatory sources, like federal prison industries, there's a few things if you buy, you have to go to mandatory, FAR mandated sources first. If you can't get what you need from those sources, it says, agencies are encouraged to consider satisfying requirements from or through non-mandatory sources, such as federal supply schedules, like GSA schedules, government-wide acquisition contracts, multi-agency contracts, and other procurement instruments intended for use by multiple agencies, including BPAs, etc. So the point here is, if you're a government buyer, you start with mandatory sources up. Can't buy it from federal prison industries. Then you say, does anybody else already have a contract vehicle out there where all I have to do is place an order against an existing contract? I don't have to go through the whole process, do a competition, negotiate all my own terms and conditions, and figure out how to do all that. Does somebody else have something? Oh, yes. There's an existing multi-agency contract out there that covers the scope that I need. I can just buy through that.
This part of the FAR, I don't know any parts of the FAR that specifically say contract vehicle. But that's what this is talking about. So FAR 8.004A1 basically says use an existing contract vehicle. And then the paragraph B, the following paragraph, is the one that says, okay, if you can't do that, then you can make your own, which, you know, it says use commercial sources or on the open market. But the expectation is use an existing contract vehicle. And the reason I'm foot stomping this is that's not what the government calls it. They call it non-mandatory sources, like government-wide acquisition, multi-agency contract, that list that you just went through. But those are the vehicles that we're talking about.
The term contract vehicle is important because a contract vehicle, an existing contract vehicle, can be the path of least resistance to buy or to sell.
And that's the reason to use it. It is the path of least resistance. Normally, it's for the government side. It's the one of the ways that you can target. You have a pool of like requirements that you can draw more targeted offerers, companies that do this. You have this thing that needs to be done. Here's a bunch of companies that you already know do it, and they already have a contract with the government. They'll look at the path of least resistance to me.
And it's the same for industry. Do you know how the government buys what you sell? Do they have an existing vehicle that includes the scope for what you do? If you're selling IT services and the government has a multi-agency, multi-award contract set up where 10 different prime contractors have indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts already awarded to them to sell IT services, the agency is not going to do a competition and award directly to you. They're going to buy through the multi-award contract that exists. If you're not one of the primes to sell your services to the government, you may need to be a subcontractor to one of the existing primes. But if you don't know, you're banging your head against the wall trying to get the government to buy from you.
If you're not the path of least resistance, they're not very likely to.
Government folks, the FAR says start by using these existing vehicles. Use the non-mandatory sources that are already out there that someone else in the government has gone to all the trouble to set up for you.
Yeah, I mean, why reinvent the wheel? I mean, these existing contracts, they offer pre-vetted offerers. Sometimes there are 10 companies. Sometimes there are 40. There's one called the SOCOM Wide Mission Support. It's a contract that's being recompeted now. Has 40 companies in it. Again, that's a pretty big number. And then Seaport E has like 1,800, or last time I checked. That's a lot of companies, but they're still pre-vetted, right? So you still have this differing sizes of pools, but depending on your circumstances, one of those vehicles, if you can use it, if it's a multi-agency and you're in it, or you're in an agency where it applies, it becomes a path of least resistance for you.
Yeah, these vehicles are built to make it the path of least resistance, to make the acquisition process easier. It limits the market research requirement for government buyers. If you're in Special Operations Command, for instance, and you need mission support services, there are 40 contractors out there that have already been, like you said, pre-vetted. The terms and conditions of the contracts have already been negotiated, and you can compete just amongst those winners and not compete and have to negotiate all over again, but compete and award within the rule set that has been already designed in SWIMS, in that SOCOM wide mission support contract. So competition should be faster and easier. It should be. You can make it more difficult if you really want to, but most of these contracts are set up to make the competition process easier.
The downside is you have to make sure that the requirement matches the contract, because very few requirements are like for like, where you absolutely can say, oh yes, we need this exact water bottle, or we need this exact service. In fact, the more you get into services, the more difficult it can be. It can be a dangerous habit to say, oh, we can just put this on this contract vehicle.
Yeah, some contract vehicles will say time and materials orders are not allowed on this contract vehicle, right? If you're buying something that the best possible way for the government to buy it is through a time and materials type contract, you may not be able to use that contract vehicle to place an order.
So the other extreme is that some task orders can be so arduous that they feel like a FAR Part 15 competition, where the steps to be able to win, even though you're in a smaller pool, can be so numerous and complex that you may as well just done the contract yourself.
Yeah, you can't tell any difference between the pre-negotiated, pre-vetted multi-award contract, the competition within that, and a competition had that pre-vetted contract vehicle never existed in the first place.
Yeah, so sometimes they can get too complicated.
industry folks, if you haven't caught on yet that path of least resistance is the theme here, why do contract vehicles exist? To create a path of least resistance. If you are not on the vehicle, if you don't have the multi-award contract awarded to you, you're not the path of least resistance. And you may have to get on it by being a subcontractor to one of the existing primes in order to make it easy for that agency to buy from you.
Which contract could they use? Is it yours? That's the question I ask. The next question is, which contract should they use? Well, if you're not on their vehicle, it's not the path of least resistance. And then of course there's the other side of which contract would they use? They're going to use the one that's path of least resistance. If they have one existing already, that's the one they're going to use.
Yep.
And if you don't know all three of the which one they could, should, or would use, we can help with that.
It's very likely if your agency has a multi-award contract for IT services and you want to buy IT services, you're not allowed. You're prohibited from doing your own competition for IT services. You have to use the vehicle that's been set up, because that's why they went to the trouble of setting it up, right?
Exactly. They don't want you going rogue and making your own contracts. It's like the whole point was to make this vehicle we all use, because you get economies of scale out of it and lots of other benefits.
Yeah, this is a good reminder for industry folks how important the competitions for the multi-award vehicles are, how important it is to have your services on a GSA schedule if that's the way your customers buy.
If that's the way you, let me clarify that. If that's how your customer buys. This is why, again, this is targeting on steroids. You can get 500 IDIQ seats on contracts that none of your customers use.
Right.
So you have to be very careful that you've done the research to say, okay, what is my customer actually going to use?
That's a great way to bring this one home, Kevin. To wrap it up, the government folks, understand the options out there. Know what's mandatory for your agency and know what's available in other agencies that can meet your requirement and make your buying job easier.
If an existing contract's a path of least resistance, use it. But make sure that it actually fits your requirement. For, like your example, Paul, if you need a T&M contract, don't just force them to a contract to make it firm fixed price, because it probably will blow up in your face.
Industry folks, we've said multiple times already, know which vehicle your target customers use. Make sure that you are available to them by being on that vehicle, or either as a prime or a sub. Remember that many of the requirements, the solicitations for supplies and services that are acquired through these vehicles, they aren't publicly posted in the contract opportunities section of SAM.gov. They only release the solicitation to the owners of these vehicles, to the awardees for the multiple awards. So if they have 10 contractors that have IDIQ contracts, those 10 contractors get an email or maybe even have a site, a custom site that posts the requirements only for them. If you're not a part of these government-wide or agency-wide or multi-award contracts, you may not even know that you missed out on a solicitation.
Or the opportunity that you've been targeting for a long time moved to one of these, you won't know that it was awarded.
Right.
I mean, the train, sorry to beat up on this metaphor, but it's funny. The train has left the station and you didn't even know it. That's just right. Terrifying to think about. So how do you find these? Is a passive solution is look at the data. You look at USA spending and federal procurement data systems, which is the now contract data, I think is what it's called, in SAM.gov. A lot of the data is in there. Okay, you can see what vehicle has this agency used. Okay. A more active way is ask. It's network with people, hypothesize what could they use? Given that they're buying this and there are 7 vehicles that do this, which one could they use? You can also ask us at Skyway for help. This is what we help you think through.
And lastly, industry, if you already have one of these vehicles, if you have a multi-award contract or you have a GSA schedule, make sure that you educate your customers on, here is how you buy from me. This non-mandatory source that the FAR says you're supposed to use before you do your own competition is available and I'm on it. This is the path of least resistance.
Yes. And that episode, the episode we did a couple hundred ago called The Educated Customer, this is the kind of thing we're talking about, is your customer is not likely to be scouring all the multiple award contracts out there. If you've got one and you say, hey, by the way, you can award to me through this, that will speed up the process. That's a really good point.
All right, that's enough good points for today. I will talk to you later.
All right, I'll see you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for today's episode. As we mentioned there at the end, when you need help understanding what vehicles your agency uses to buy, Skyway's team of former contracting officers is there to help through custom consulting and training. Go to skywayacq.com or give us a call at 877-884-5280. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.